I'm with a former mayor and current councilwoman, Lee, who is my guest today. It's interesting, the topic that we're going to be talking about, and it is the price of public service. You are a public servant here in San Mateo, California. And let's just back up a little bit. And why did you elect public service as your calling?
I don't feel in some ways I chose it. I feel it really chose me. The community came to me, and I never saw myself in the foreground. I always thought of myself as the woman behind the woman. And as a community organizer, I was in the work, and people kept on saying, like, we need you. We're looking at you. And I was called to serve, and in a very real way, lifted by community. And, you know, my campaign was driven by young people, and they, you know, if it weren't for their efforts, I would never have become a successful candidate, the first female Asian woman to ever hold office in the city of San Mateo. But of course, there was a choice involved. I think, you know, when I distill it down to the bare minimum of, you know, what drives, you know, what drove me into public service, I think it stems from an incredible audacity of optimism and maybe momentary insanity. And that combination was the tipping point of seeing something better and having the chutzpah to think that I could be a part of that, making that come true. And I think, you know, I've been pretty open about my personal background and my personal struggle, you know, struggle and pain, suffering and hurt and underrepresentation. Like all of those experiences are my lived experience. And what came together for me to have the privilege to serve in public office was good public policy. I saw this nexus of that opportunity coming to me when I needed it, and the real moral imperative to pay that opportunity forward for other people. Because I had benefited from good public policy, I then have a responsibility to ensure that good public policy continues to serve those who need it.
Public landscape has changed in terms of perhaps looking at going back 10 years, the role of the public servant has changed dramatically as a result of, the political climate of the role that public service now find themselves having to work in. And I'm curious to know, has that changing public landscape impacted you as a public servant? And if so, how? I'll be a little bit more specific. There are threats, there are intimidation of public servants, and I'm wondering how you navigate, if you've had to navigate any of those challenges as a public servant.
Absolutely, I have. I have had my home vandalized. Well, you know, the place where I reside with my two children as a single mom, I've experienced death threats. I am regularly the victim of harassment and trolling, gross misogyny and racism. I had, you know, an hate mail delivered to my home. You know, the reality of violence, the threat of violence, the unvarnished hatred is unfortunately a part of my experience in public office. I do, you know, I see this, I take the long view of this work, and I think about, you know, as ugly as what I'm seeing and experiencing is, I'm not getting, you know, hosed on the streets, right? I'm not being lynched on the corner. Like there's people in our history, in our recent history, that have seen much worse. And I hold that in mind in context of the hatred that I'm experiencing and privy to, and the threats and harassment that are part of my story as a woman of color in leadership. And it does very importantly inform how I lead. And in some ways, I remember often that wonderful saying of, you know, when people show you who they are, believe them. There's many people who believe or want to believe that in the Bay Area, you know, the beacon of progressive, you know, diversity, you know, values of diversity and inclusivity, that they want to believe that we've eradicated racism and sexism and homophobia or anti-Semitism, when in fact, that's, you know, it's so far from the truth. We still have so much more to go. So divisiveness is, and all the hatred and racism and prejudice is still very much a part of public discourse.
I'm just curious to know, how do you carry on the business of public service with all these potential distractions? How do you maintain your focus?
Well, you said it very well. It is just that. It is meant to silence me. It is meant to distract me from the work. And so, you know, the way that I have been called into this work is to maintain laser focus on getting the work done. And part of that work is, you know, leading through anti-racism policy, right? Being a very proud feminist and a loud feminist, and making sure that that platform is advanced. And so I'm, you know, I'm very, very methodically and very focused on getting the work done. And in some ways, I think that that's what makes me such a big threat. I was listening to the Baltimore mayor, Brandon Scott, who recently was asked about, you know, this word that he was called. And he said something, and he said a quote that I thought was very powerful. He said, "Me being at my position means that their way of thinking, their way of life, of being comfortable while everyone else suffers, is at risk. And they should be afraid, because that's my purpose in life." His quote so deeply resonated with me, because my job is not done until everyone has the opportunity to live with dignity. When we can, you know, uplift community and actually enact a just and inclusive community that are realizing the values that we espouse, that's when the job is done. And so everything that it comes my way, it just lights the fire.
The fire. I would presume that you got to have that fire, that burning drive within you to do what you do as a public servant. So I'd like to ask the question, in your own words, how do you define public service?
I think that a big part of public service for me is fully realizing the possibility of democracy. And, you know, democracy, while as imperfect as it is, it's, you know, they say the best system that we have. And I think of democracy as a muscle that, you know, it will atrophy if we don't use it, if we don't take care of it. And it will thrive and strengthen when we do. And so a big part of the work in public service, you know, is meeting societal needs and improving people's quality of life and, you know, and supporting a more caring and compassionate community, right, to come into being, and righting historical wrongs, right? Addressing divisiveness with decisive moral clarity. Those are all the, you know, the work of public service and leadership. And I really believe that a big part of my work and the way that I lead is exercising that muscle of democracy and bringing everyone into the work, and being as collaborative and transparent as you can possibly be.
That almost sounded like a philosophy of public service. Would you say that that's your philosophy or a philosophy of good public servants service? Or would you have another example or character, or an example of good public service?
The how question of, you know, what makes it, how do good public servants operate? You know, from my perspective, it requires a real analysis of what the problems are and what community is facing. And, you know, by my assessment, and I think by most people's assessment, the status quo problem solving is not working. And the status quo of, you know, this community, for example, you know, in the county of San Mateo, one of the wealthiest counties in the whole entire country, with one of the worst income gaps, right? We are facing such severe disparities, and people are deeply suffering in our community. And so, you know, a big part of what I esteem in public servants is the courage to challenge the status quo and change it. And I'll tell you that there's an oppressive amount of resistance and inertia that is rewarded because it's politically expedient to keep things the way they are.
That's a good point. I'm curious. It's kind of like an outsider coming into a system that's status quo, and I'm curious to know how much of a pushback, resistance, or isolation you have faced in terms of challenging the status quo.
Oh, I have. I definitely have my scars to bear. One story I'll tell you is I had the audacity to ask a candidate for city council what his position on abortion was, and called out the quote unquote pro-choice Democrats that were supporting this anti-choice candidate, and experienced extreme levels of retaliation. Those same quote unquote pro-choice candidates tried to recall me for holding up the mirror and exposing their hypocrisy. I was happy to say, or I am happy to say, that they were entirely unsuccessful and showed up on deadline with not one valid signature to qualify for the recall.
My guest is former mayor and current council member Lee. The program is Like It Is. I'm Bob Franklin. Thank you for joining me. I'm very interested, Councilwoman Lee, about the strength. You referenced earlier, you said democracy is like a muscle. What do you say about our institutions in terms of their ability to handle the onslaught of challenges to the viability of these institutions, our court systems, our political system, and so forth?
That is such an important question. And, you know, we look to our institutions as, you know, one of the last lines of defense. And I will say that by and large, like, at least in this, you know, in my city, I feel confident in our city government, and I feel confident in the constitution that we are entrusted to uphold, which is our city charter, and there certainly have been challenges to it. I mean, one of the most egregious experiences I ever had in elected office was my appointment to mayor being blocked. And for 7 days, obstructionism that deprived the city of San Mateo of any mayoral representation and breached 128 years of peaceful transfer of power in our traditions. There is very real threats of authoritarianism and obstructionism and misinformation that are testing our institutions. And, you know, what the antidote is, you know, what our greatest opportunity is, are the power of the people. I mean, it's ultimately, it is the people who hold up the democracy that will serve us or will be our downfall.
Let's stay on that point a little longer about institutions. How, in your view, are institutions strengthened? And is that, it, does that strength comes internally or does it come externally to help institutions to be strong? Or is it a philosophical strength that enables institutions to be either successful or not successful, weak or strong? The strength of institutions, Council Member Lee, just speak briefly about the confidence that you have in the institutions here in San Mateo.
I do feel very grateful that our city government is run by true public servants who are motivated by nothing more than their desire to serve the community. And they, you know, they operate like Switzerland. They are apolitical and the utmost professionals.
Let me swing back. Success stories. There are always success stories, and sometimes they don't make the newspapers. Sometimes they don't get on radio. Sometimes success is helping that indigent person, saying a nice word to a homeless person, giving that person encouragement, a positive feeling of self-worth. I'm just curious, would you share a couple of feel-good stories that, you know, you've encountered as your role, in your role as a public servant?
I would be happy to. I think one story that I often think of that heartens me when I'm, you know, when I'm in the, you know, in the woods and can't see the forest through the trees. I think about this business owner, restaurant business owner, second generation, and her mom was an immigrant, had never voted in this country, and never participated in City Hall once, and because I was elected to office, she came to City Hall for the first time, and gave public comment and registered to vote, and it was the first time in her, you know, decades running a business in our downtown and being a part of our community that she felt that City Hall belonged to her and that she had a voice that would be heard and respected and appreciated. And that, you know, that story of that one woman, that one business owner, and the change that it made in her life, I think, you know, it sticks with me. You know, I'm raising my kids here, and you know, another project that I've been working on is the efforts to keep our community pool open in our neighborhood of North Central at the King Center. My kids learned how to swim at the King Center, and this pool, which was built, you know, half a century ago, is in dire need of repair. And if we don't make those investments, it will need to close. And so I worked very hard to lobby our Congress member and bring forward the voice of the community. We had over 500 community members providing testimonials and telling stories about, you know, their memories and you know, swimming in that pool and, you know, the life-saving skills that need to continue in our community. And we were successful in getting a very sizable congressional grant, and I think we're on our way to maintaining that pool and keeping it open for hopefully another 50 years.
I'm interested also in You just talked about that congressional grant that you and others worked to make happen here. Collaboration, building consensus. Talk a bit about the importance of working with people with diverse perspectives and coming to some degree of common ground for the common good of the community.
I think there's always, the need to hear all voices, right? And to never come to a decision point with a predefined opinion until we've heard from everyone. And so, you know, one of the things that I do regularly is I hold open office hours virtually and also at our local park. So anyone can literally book my calendar and take a walk with me. And I have no idea who's going to show up and what they want to talk about. And it's, you know, sometimes one of the best parts of my day. And I think that, you know, with all this kind of like online trolling and, you know, the ugliness that can happen, like, you know, behind the screen and, you know, the keyboard warriors, as we like to call them, it's quite another thing to actually be in conversation with people, to be looking them in the eye and hearing their voice directly, and then them hearing mine and really like acknowledging each other's humanity. And so, you know, the way that I approach things is, you know, we might not agree on everything. Like, there's really no one in the world I'm going to agree on everything about, right? But hopefully we can agree on some of the basic, you know, shared principles and values. And a lot of times the differences are in just, you know, how we see the solutions coming about, right? Or how we interpret the threats and the problems. And so, you know, I try very hard not to lose humanity and other people's, you know, perspectives in that process, even when I'm vehemently disagreeing with them.
I had the privilege of attending an event where you were receiving a Crystal Award. I was very, very proud of you in that particular moment, well-deserved. It's really heartfelt to see you recognized in the manner in which you so deserved. And I was just curious in terms of the shoulders that you are standing on, were standing on, that enable you to ascend to the office of mayor and now city council member. Would you care to talk about the shoulders that you're standing on, or who helped to make that particular moment or those moments possible for you?
Yes, I think that there's a couple important credits that need to be given. One is the credit to the community who saw this in me, right, and asked me to serve, because I didn't see it myself. I didn't see this for myself. There had never been an Asian woman in office, and I thought, how could that be for me? Like, I'm not that kind of person, right? And so the community who entrusted me and had that confidence in me and voted for me is, you know, saw something that I didn't see. And every day I aspire to serve them and even the folks that did not vote for me to the best of my ability. And so there's that credit. And I think, you know, in terms of the inner circle, I am so fortunate to have a very strong group of women that have my back and are, you know, are picking up the invisible workload of that is the reality of a single mom, right, in public office. When I need to go to a meeting and and my kid needs to get picked up from, you know, their track meet 40 minutes away, it's the moms who, you know, who are helping take care of my kids and take care of me when I need it. And so I feel, you know, I feel just tremendous gratitude and reverence for all of the strong women and the mothers in this world, in our community, who take care of so much, including taking care of elected officials like myself, who are single moms, you know, struggling to balance motherhood and governing.
I started with the question, the price of public service. Is the price of public service is not too high for you?
The price of public service is very high. It is very high. It is not too high. And it is certainly, you know, it's not too high to be a deterrent from getting the work done. And it's not meant to be easy. And I never once went into this work expecting it to be easy. And I think ease and comfort are, you know, are sort of constructs of privilege. I did not grow up with that kind of privilege. I grew up knowing struggle. And so, you know, I am no stranger to hard work and struggling to in the fight, in the good fight, and getting into the good trouble to get the job done, right? And to do right by our community. That's something that, you know, gets me up in the morning, honestly. It's not easy, and it is very hard, and it comes at great sacrifice, but it is truly a privilege to serve, and I feel grateful every day that I get to do this work.
Former Mayor and Council Member Lee of San Mateo, California, thank you for being a guest.
Thank you so much.
I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.